It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
It is a numbers game right here at Visa, where sports betting analytics live actionable sports betting information. It's Gil Alexander live in the Bay. It's all brought to you by BetMGM, proud sponsors of the show. Coming up this hour, hour number two, right here at SiriusXM channel 204, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Sling, and Game Plus. Brady Cannon on the Workday Charity Open. We got to get into the golf for sure. Brady on his way on vacation. I think he's headed up to Colorado. I don't want to give his exact whereabouts because I don't want people to mob him, paparazzi. But we'll get him on the road to get his thoughts on the golf tournament this weekend. Not to mention, we'll do some more MLB scheduling quirks. We want to talk about those. We did a whole bunch yesterday. We'll do some more with Danny Burke coming up this hour as well. But we had this gentleman on Monday, did a few segments with him then. We'll just try to eke two out of him today. We won't keep him too long. He is known on Twitter at whale_capper. The man's name is Drew Dinsick. He is half of the Deep Dive podcast team and just does phenomenal work in sports betting. And there he is without his sunglasses on. I would not even recognize you. This is the first time I've ever seen you without your sunglasses on. Drew Dinsick from Long Beach, California, ladies and gentlemen. What's no sunshine?
Yeah, no, it's a gloomy morning, but that's okay. It's a great morning. We get to talk NFL. This is so great. Thanks for having me back. I've been looking forward to this since we chatted on Monday, and I hope you guys are doing well this morning.
Yeah, I hope so. Were you too? Listen, we had a great time Monday. For those who missed it, I think what we're going to do is we're going to put that in this in podcast form, and we'll throw it out as a whole. But on Monday, we talked about your power rankings and how the chasm between the haves and the have-nots is wider this year than not only last year, but as you pointed out, quite a bit of years in the NFL. And we talked about the diminishing value of home field advantage, not just your opinion, but by the numbers based on the pool of 256 spreads that are out there for all 17 weeks, we hope, of the National Football League season. Man, we hope, Drew. We just hope. That more than anything, we hope.
Knocking on wood over here.
Yeah, please knock some more. Okay, so today let's actually get into some specific things before we get into some of the derivative markets, because I know you did podcasts throughout the whole summer. MVP, defensive player, I believe, of the year, coach of the year. You did a whole bunch of stuff. We'll talk about those momentarily. First, let's just go into the notion of season wins, how you're even approaching that as a group, because I'm not even sure you have any bets because of the strange nature. And then any futures, whether it's Super Bowl, conference, or division, maybe there's a division future you might like out there, but just generally, that overall approach, how does it feel for you? Like, what do you think you're doing here?
Yeah, this is a very unique year. Normally, almost all of my preseason work, almost all of my preparation heading into the season is really focusing on win totals, is trying to identify early value on those and getting ahead of the moves. Because we see, half a win move is pretty common across the entire breadth of 32 teams. And so that's a pretty lucrative market to get involved in. My personal approach with season wins is looking for value on unders, just because in general, they tend to be, fat on the over. If you add up all the season wins across all 32 teams, there's more wins than there actually are available. So that's pretty intuitive. And I tend to look for teams that have that are lined in the 8 wins and above range, who we think, hey, an injury to this quarterback drastically changes the outlook for this given team. And then I specifically like to identify the alt unders, like for instance Circa. They may have a number like 9 up for the Colts, but I would much rather have a number like 8 at under 8 at plus 200 than I would rather have under 9 at minus 110. And that's just kind of all sort of philosophy I've generated over the years under the auspice of, we don't really know a lot about how these teams are going to perform over the course of 16 weeks, especially to the tune of having that degree of certainty that the number is correct. And so the variance kind of gives you an advantage to look for some of those alt unders and alt overs. That's a fun way to go about playing the wins total market. Now, in my prep this year, I got spooked big time. I looked at week 3 and 4 of the season, and there's no divisional games, which to me spells trouble, that the NFL is kind of built in this potential for, moving the schedule around. So I'm going to steer clear of the wins market this year and focus on those division futures and on the Super Bowl futures, as well as the prop markets you mentioned.
That makes total sense. Gil Alexander, Drew Dinsick, right here on a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And not, by the way, Sirius XM channel 204. And not even a division future. Like, even that, you're just, no.
No, division. I think division futures markets are worth focusing on for sure. I do think that they're okay. they're gonna if they play the full, you know, they play you know, some semblance of the season, they're still gonna get the two divisional games in for every division. And so I do think that those markets are ripe to try to find value. But in general, whereas most of my focus would be on the wins totals this year, I'm gonna look towards other opportunities to try to get down preseason.
Yeah, it's a great point about the schedule too. How it's you know, formulated that there is room for cancellations. By the way, RG3, the great 2012 Offensive Rookie of the Year, Robert Griffin III, yesterday saying he's trying to break news. He's like, there's going to be no preseason. He said it yesterday, which we already kind of assume is probably going to be the case, but it doesn't. Two games already canceled. We'll see if all four are. All right. Well, let's start with MVP. That's fun.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, you did this one, if I'm not mistaken. This was the earliest of your derivative podcast on the Deep Dive podcast with your co-host, Andy Molitor. So you did this a while ago, and I'm not sure. I didn't even bother delving in because I'm like, I wonder if he's changed his thinking on this so many months ago. What are you thinking with the MVP market?
I haven't really seen a lot of action. I haven't seen the market move much. I haven't changed my opinion at all, really. So a lot of that is still pretty relevant. In general, you know, the futures market, it's important to kind of identify what is the hold in these markets. It's important to shop around for prices because you can do a pretty decent job of putting together a pretty low synthetic hold across all of the options that are available to us as bettors. And so those are kind of the key starting points, I guess, for any of these conversations. MVP, to me, I kind of have a very specific formula as I kind of break it down. I realistically think there's only about 15 men in the NFL who have a realistic shot at winning the MVP. So that's not that many. And after that, it's just a matter of coming up with fair prices and trying to identify value. And the parameters that I use to get to like my 15 or so candidates, I think are reasonable choices. Off the top, I throw out defensive players. I throw out wide receivers and, you know, somewhat controversially, I tend to throw out running backs just on the basis of we don't see running backs nowadays get the kind of workload that they can accrue the type of count, you know, volume stats that would break records and warrant them considerations against the top tier quarterbacks in the league. So I'm really starting with a pool of 32 quarterbacks. And then the other qualifying criteria I like to use is the voters tend to look at the top of the standings, and they tend to say, okay, well, these were the good teams. Were there any outstanding players on those teams who warrant, an MVP award? And so if you are a team that is an unrealistic shot at getting to 10 wins, then I'm not really interested in betting an MVP on you as the quarterback. And so, for instance, guys who are sort of at the top of the market, guys like Russell Wilson, for instance. You know, he's gotten a lot of attention this season. People have kind of brought up the pretty unbelievable point that he's never even gotten an MVP award vote to date in his career, which seems insane, but is true. I'm still, he'll get one someday, presumably, and maybe after the Pete Carroll era is over. But whatever the case is, this year in that division, which is super competitive, and with the defense that he has on the other side of the ball from him, I have a very, very tough time seeing the Seahawks coming out in, say, the one or two seed this year. And so they're probably in the dogfight for a wild card. And if that's the case, he could put up the best stats of any quarterback. It's just going to be very tough for, the voters to kind of look past the fact that there is a number of teams that have, 10, 11, 12, 13 wins potentially. If the Seahawks are sitting there at 9-7, he's pretty much out of the race. And that's kind of where I have that team. So there's some pretty big names at the top of that market that I'm pretty willing to strike off. Wilson is one. Lamar Jackson, I'm willing to look past this year. Number one I find it very tough to believe he'll be able to replicate the unbelievable numbers he put together last year. I thought that was afforded by somewhat of a softer schedule than they have this season, on top of the fact that they've had some roster turnover on the offensive side of the ball that may make it a little bit more challenging for him, especially starting out the season. And so there are some big names at the top there that I'm okay looking past. Prescott at 12-1 doesn't show much value for me. If that he's gonna have a lot of opportunities to score. The Dallas Cowboys, I think, are you know, very much, you know, I'd much rather have a number like Dallas Cowboys 12-1 to score the most points this season than I would Dak Prescott 12-1 MVP, just because there's going to be a lot of credit shared in Dallas between all of those weapons on offense. So I think that's a little bit too short. We get down the list there, and I see a guy like Deshaun Watson, who you could have had for about 30-1, you know, in the last couple of weeks, and it may still be out there available in the 30-1 range. It looks like 18-1 here at the. I can't tell where the odds are from, but the 18-1 is much closer. Yeah, much closer to a fair price. For me, for Deshaun Watson. You know, anything in the 20, 25, 30-1 range for Deshaun Watson makes a ton of sense. And my case really for that is, you know, Deshaun, absolutely, clearly a top five talent in the NFL. The AFC South is wide open. Expectations for the Texans this year are relatively low. And so, you know, all that he has to just basically be himself and have a little bit of luck bounce his way as far as, you know, capturing some wins. We know he's an incredible late game player. So the likelihood that he's going to have some fourth quarter comebacks and some, you know, some media narrative is going to be there to warrant voter consideration. That appeals to me big time. So of the kind of guys at the top, Deshaun Watson is the one that sticks out the most as the mispriced. And so then after that, it's just let's look down the board and see if we can find anyone who has a realistic shot to get to 10 wins, who's lined in the 40-50-1 range. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
I was going to say there's two names that pretty clearly stick out to me in the 40-51 range. One of them is a comeback player that we talked about on Monday, Ben Roethlisberger, and the other is San Francisco quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm less enthused about, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, obviously more of a risky play. I like the fact that he's kind of changed his life, and you know, he's presumably off the alcohol and off the painkillers, and he's a little sharper this year. He's had a year to rest his elbow. He had a procedure on his elbow as well, and he's talked a lot about this offseason how well it's feeling. He has a plethora of weapons on offense. They have a good enough defense that they can get to 10, 11 wins, I think, pretty readily. And I think that, you know, that kind of feel good story, lends itself to an MVP at, you know, price like 40-1 is what I bet that at. And I think that's very worthy. And then Jimmy Garoppolo, there's a very clear pattern when you look at Kyle Shanahan offenses, how the quarterback develops over the course of, say, three seasons. And this is the year that we're expecting Jimmy Garoppolo to really have that, huge bump from making the most out of the, Kyle Shanahan system. And on top of that, you know, we expect very clearly that the 49ers are going to be in contention to win the NFC. We expect very much that, there's going to have to be some level of improvement from the quarterback position if they're going to want to, you know, take the next step and win a championship. So the overall system that they have in place in San Francisco and the weapons that they put around him, on top of the fact that, they have one of the best offensive lines, and, they lose a guy I forget who retired, but they lost their key tackle who retired, and bring in Trent Williams is massively the huge Staley. Upgrade for them. So, yeah, Staley retires. They don't miss a beat. They bring in Trent Williams. The center for the 49ers is absolutely outstanding player. He kind of I think he got injured in the Saints game last year, and it did impact, in my opinion at least, it did impact Garoppolo's performance down the stretch. And so I think a full season with that supporting cast and, you know, the Kyle Shanahan system, which, you know, just makes the quarterback, you know, turns Matt Ryan from a borderline bust into an MVP candidate. Like, I think that recipe, that blueprint is absolutely there for Jimmy G this year.
I love those. Deshaun Watson, 18-1 right there at BetMGM. Big Ben 40-1 and Jimmy G 50-1 there in the MVP market. We're talking to Drew Dinsick at @whale_capper. The Deep Dive podcast is his podcast with his buddy Andy Molitor. The last comment about the MVP market, because I do want to move on to Rookie of the Year, offense and defense. And this has nothing to do with this year, but as I'm looking at those and I see Patrick Mahomes up there at +350, he of the $500 million contract, it occurs to me just as I'm looking at that, like, I wonder if he'll get to the point, and it certainly doesn't apply now this year, but I wonder if he is truly the transcendent talent that it looks like he might very well be. If he's going to be in that LeBron category in future years where you can almost give him the MVP any year that you want, but voters will just decide randomly not to because, well, that's no fun.
If he keeps winning Super Bowls, I think that's absolutely in the cards. I mean, you look at because the opposite of that is the Peyton Manning, you know, the phenomenon. Like Peyton Manning, they wanted to give it to him every year. And it felt like that was in large part because he was, you know, he just couldn't break through in the playoffs. He just couldn't get that chip. And then eventually, you know, he finally wins the title and they stopped giving him MVPs. But I think there's going to be voter fatigue for Patrick Mahomes. He put up such a spectacular statistical season 2 years ago that anyone who voted for him then is going to look at whatever stats he puts together this year and they're going to compare him to that year and be like, well, it wasn't as good as his MVP here. So, you know, I'm not sure we can vote for him. And, on top of that, you know, he's kind of gotten the taste of playoffs and winning and championship now. Like, what does he need to really prove in the regular season? I mean, there's going to be a dogfight, obviously, for the top seed in the AFC between them and the Ravens. But I could very easily see kind of as a team, they save their bolts a little bit for the postseason and try to repeat this championship as opposed to, say, you know, just going scorched earth from, you know, week one to week 17.
Very possible as well. I can totally see that. Offensive rookie of the year, Drew, you and I had a lot of fun talking before the NFL draft about where we thought players were going. All right, now that they're situated where they are, let's talk offense. There you go. Birds have some thoughts on this as well. What do you think?
Yeah, so the offensive rookie of the year is a really, really fun handicap. And it's a very difficult handicap. Defensive rookie of the year, not so much. But offensive rookie of the year, I have no problem at all striking down Joe Burrow at plus 250. I think the Cincinnati Bengals have a very, very difficult schedule. They have, the offensive line question marks are very real for me on this team. He obviously without a full season, you know, full off season to get him in NFL football shape, I worry a little bit about his frame and about his size, about his ability to, you know, make 16 starts, to be candid. So I'm going to steer well clear of Burrow in that market. And that should present value since he's such a huge part of the top of that board. So looking past him, I thought, you know, reasonably hard about Tua, but I think his over under on starts is probably 8-ish. It seems like the Dolphins really are going to give Fitzpatrick the ball to start the season. And, you know, presuming he doesn't, doesn't go into the cycle where he's, you know, throwing four picks a game. It's going to be a couple weeks before we see Tua make a start. And really the Dolphins aren't incentivized to put him out there given his injury history and, you know, putting him at risk this year. So we could see Tua spend the season on, you know, season with the clipboard. As far as other quarterbacks to consider, you know, for sure, I'm interested in whatever number I can get on Jalen Hurts. The fact that they took him in the second round and the fact that Carson Wentz is one hit away from missing the season is very intriguing to me. Obviously, the Eagles have holes in their roster, but overall, it's a pretty competitive team. It's a team that we're expecting to compete for the NFC East title. And so, can you take a guy like Wentz out of the quarterback role, throw Hurts in, and still win 10 games? Sure. So I think that, you know, that kind of the same kind of potential that that our friend Sports Cheat identified 3 or 4 years ago with Dak Prescott, I think absolutely exists for Jalen Hurts this year. And if you're going to give me 100-1 on the potential that he ends up as the starting quarterback and could win double digit games, then I'm interested in that that long shot for lunch money, obviously. Beyond that, and really kind of speaking to that situation exactly, that's kind of the way that the entire market sets up for offensive rookie of the year, in my opinion. It's going to be someone who gets an opportunity that we don't realize right now, which makes it more of a gamble and less of a handicap, obviously. You look and say, okay, well, who are some of the players that have a reasonable opportunity to step into roles and get volume, get statistics from the running back standpoint, from the wide receiver standpoint? And the only guys that I could truly identify that I'm intrigued with, Chase Claypool at the Steelers. He has a very real chance to step into the wide receiver 2 role in Pittsburgh. And gosh, the wide receiver two role. You know, think about the, you know, how Juju Smith-Schuster, he exploded with Antonio Brown drawing double coverage. A guy like Claypool, I feel like could have that same kind of impact on a good offense, on a winning team. That intrigues me. I got down on Claypool, I think, at 40-1, and they're, you know, I would say that the fair price on him is probably closer to 20. So that's the only kind of other shot I think is worth taking besides getting some Jalen Hurts insurance.
Yeah, I did not expect you, Drew, to come on and say Jalen Hurts. I really did not. I just checked the Westgate. Jalen Hurts, just the one book I happened to check. Jalen Hurts 80-1, and Claypool 50-1. So we
there we go.
Better than the number you got there on Chase.
There we go.
Steelers. And I hope, boys and girls, I hope everybody listened to the synthetic hold, trying to create a zero synthetic hold. Drew referenced that. We talked about it with Ed Miller and Matthew Davidow about their book, The Logic of Sports Betting, trying to manipulate markets in a world that reduces the hold for the book, tries to get it to zero, maybe even put it in your favor, by the way, on all these. I like those two picks. We'll do Defensive Rookie of the Year. And we'll do Coach of the Year. Ooh, I have a Coach of the Year pick that I had. I'll call my shot. I did this earlier on the show a few weeks back. Brian Flores of the Dolphins. We'll find out what Drew thinks about that and others. Defensive Rookie of the Year, Coach of the Year. More with Drew Dinson coming back on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Back on A Numbers Game, Gil Alexander, just like the man said, here in San Francisco. Drew Dinsick sitting out on, I don't know if it's his backyard, his patio there in Long Beach, California, overcast day. Drew and I were just talking off air about how in 1982, in a shortened NFL season, a strike-shortened year, Mark Moseley, place kicker of the Washington Redskins, won the National Football League's MVP award. It actually happened, boys and girls. At the time, Moseley set the record for most consecutive field goals converted, which at that time, Drew, was 27 in a row. True story. I know this. I was at those games for the Skins as a kid. All right, so we have about 5 minutes here to get through these two. So let's start. Defensive Rookie of the Year. I don't know if you'll need to spend much time on this. Any conviction on Defensive Rookie of the Year, or is that virtually
impossible? This is the only prop market on the board where don't look past the top. This is Chase Young's to lose. This is the entire blueprint of the Redskins defense is so similar to what San Francisco did last year, and the likelihood that Chase Young gets featured the way Nick Bosa did, and gets the counting stats in terms of sacks, in terms of fumbles, you know, in terms of just disruptive play, is so high. I think I actually managed to pick off a 4-1 when they originally opened these, but plus 220, I think, is still value. Chase Young, in my opinion, fair price on him should be even. It's going to take an injury to keep him from Defensive Player of the Year this year.
Yeah. And the Skins were
defensive
never not taking
there,
him. Yeah, defensive rookie of the year. Yeah. Skins were never not taking him, despite some speculation otherwise. All right, Coach of the Year. I think this is fascinating. So I already said this about a month ago on the show, and I haven't made very many NFL bets. In fact, I've made two, just because I'm sort of like you. I'm like, I'm just going to see how this plays out. I don't want my money tied up for no reason. I took a flyer. This is before Cam Newton. I took a flyer on the Dolphins division, 11-1 odds. Figured maybe I can earn with it later. The other one was Brian Flores. Talk about the create. This falls right into the wheelhouse of creative ways to bet something that isn't immediately obvious. So for me, the way to bet the Dolphins, and it took me a while to think of it because I already made the AFC East pick, but I was like, oh, you know what? Brian Flores is sitting here at 25-1. If they do anything, he's getting Coach of the Year. Forget all this other stuff. That's what I'm betting. I don't know if you did the same.
I did, and that is the exact right way to approach something
Love
like
it.
This. Is exactly
Love
the right way, because like Dolphins 11-1 to win the East, is that value? Yes, they should be definitely be kind of, you know, closer to, you know, above the Jets and closer to the Bills than the market has them rated, in my opinion. But even beyond that, like, the Patriots could still win the East if the Dolphins win 9-10 games and get a wild card. Oh, that is totally, absolutely puts Flores in the decision. You add to that some of the intangibles, that like the current NFL's, you know, the intention of the, you know, a lot of the people in the room to try to, you know, provide some, you know, avenue for African-American coaches to have more of a, you know, more of a spotlight and an opportunity in this sport. And there's a lot of goodwill about the way that Brian Flores has handled his role with the Dolphins to this point. Like, just the job he did last season, getting the guys to play for him, the communication that he's had publicly this year during all of the social, you know, social unrest has been outstanding. I think there is probably people who are ready to vote for him today, not even seeing the Dolphins play a game.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, if you had to go elsewhere on that list, is there anybody else you have your eye on, or is it singularly focused on Flores?
Well, again, kind of thinking of criteria, the coach of the year almost always gets awarded to a team that was not expected to win their division that gets to about 10 wins. And so that's kind of the key in terms of evaluating this market. I'm easily striking Belichick from the top of that list because he is expected to do well. Because he is Bill Belichick. I'm easily striking McCarthy and Shanahan. And some of my friends really are high on McCarthy, and I've had some very, very serious disagreements. Like, no, there's a better way to attack that, just the way like you laid out with the Dolphins. But Shanahan's expected to win 13 games. So, you know, how does he you know, exceed expectations and win 16-1? So you have to look down that list. And, you know, going back to some of the Redskins love that we've professed in these, you know, these two shows that we've done together. Like, why is Ron Rivera 30-1? Like, this defense is going to potentially be the best defense in the NFL this year if everything works out well. You know, if the Redskins are in the wild card chase, if they are not, you know, if they're competing with the Cowboys down the stretch, Ron Rivera's in there.
Drew, love it, man. Could talk to you for hours. Hopefully we'll be able to do this often during football season. I would look forward to that. We can only hope.
Best of luck. Thanks again for having me.
You too, man. At @whale_capper, the name of the podcast is the Deep Dive Podcast. Check it out wherever podcasts are distributed. Some more MLB schedule quirks and golf talk with Brady Cannon. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network. Coming back.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Besides Point Spread Weekly, one of the benefits of a VSiN Plus subscription is a midday email with best bets from guests and hosts mentioned during all of our shows. We've also increased the amount of stats and analysis we post to VSiN.com. Sign up for a risk-free subscription now. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. It's free until August. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. It's Gil Alexander in San Francisco. Danny Burke back at the mothership in Las Vegas. The alarm has stopped sounding over there, so everybody's okay. Glad you're okay, Danny.
Yeah.
Hey, the result of the...
No, I was just going to say, finally subsided, so no, we're good. We're calm here. We're hoping it doesn't go off again.
You pull the fire alarm, dude?
What do
you
do? Not this time. Not this time, Gil.
Okay. you know, it's always the last guy you suspect.
That's right.
The results of the poll are in on Twitter, Danny. So again, back in May, May 20th, 73% of the folks said, yeah, I'll take that trade. If you give me the NFL and college football on time and in their entirety, but we lose all of the other major sports, I'm in. Switched it around yesterday and said, all right, let me throw college football into the NHL, MLB, NBA barrel. And just rephrase it by saying, now you lose college football too. But if I can guarantee you the NFL on time and in its entirety, would you still take that trade at a 73% clip? Well, Danny, the results are in. And if you ever thought that college football wasn't right up there with the NFL, think again. 64% said no this time. The simple switch of sending college football. And we got over 1,500 votes on this. It was about 25%. It is the dog days of July of the number of votes we got the first time. But I think that's enough of a sample size to tell us that just simply putting college football into the you can't have it barrel has switched it from 73% Yale take that deal NFL and college to now if it's just NFL, 64% say no. So that's how our sports rank, ladies and gentlemen. It's NFL, and right below that, if there was any doubt, it's college football. And I don't think you were surprised by that. I don't think anybody should be surprised.
Yeah, and that's the way I was leaning. I didn't think it would be as high as 64. If anything, I'd probably would guess, like I was saying, a little bit above 50, so maybe around that 55% range. But Gillen, I think this is something that's slowly increased throughout the years too, just based off of the NFL and everything that's been going around with just the enjoyment of watching the game, right? I mean, there's a break in it every 10 seconds from a penalty, and you just really don't see that as much in college football. Just really the fluidness of the college football and just how quick it goes and just the pure love for it and just watching these kids go is just a little bit better than NFL in my mind. And I used to be the opposite, frankly. I used to be all over the NFL. College football I still enjoyed, but wasn't really as enthralled in it. These past couple of years, it's flipped a little bit. I still love the NFL, don't get me wrong, but there's nothing like just sitting your butt down all day Saturday and watching all college football. So not too shocking with these results.
I think it comes down to where you grew up, because I'm sort of the same way where I grew up. I was all NFL and the college football product is great. I thought it would be less, and I'll tell you why, because I thought there'd be more people out there that are kind of getting to this point where it's like, yeah, I don't know if we can do college football, so I might as well take that deal. Mm-hmm. But apparently no. Apparently people are like, no, I'm still counting on my college football. So that was interesting. For sure. And I appreciate everybody who participated in that poll at Beating the Book. Let us continue with some of the MLB scheduling quirks. Yesterday, Danny, when you were doing five other shows here at VSiN, great day out of you, by the way. Whatever they're paying you, it's not enough. I went through the biggest thing of how the schedule now is 60 games versus 162, so 37% of the games total, and how teams like the Reds, the greatest example, club like the Reds, get 20 of their 60 games, Danny. One third exactly. So the equivalent of 54 games in a 162 game schedule, just to sort of show you how absurd it is. They get to play the Pirates, the Royals, and the Tigers for a third of their schedule. And so therefore the change of not having to play the other divisions in their own league, just sticking with their four division rivals, and then getting the other 20 games against teams from the AL Central, specifically with the Royals and the Tigers involved, and the fact that their interleague rival is the Detroit Tigers, because throw the records out when the Reds play the Tigers, Danny, that they get the best of it. The Seattle Mariners get the worst of it. And we showed that, by the way. There's a graph we could show up from Mike Petrello on VSiN.com and the VSiN app where you see how the Reds get the best of it and the Mariners get the worst of it. And no surprise, some of the other teams that get the best of it are Central teams. Some of the other teams that get the worst of it are West teams. Some other quirks that we didn't talk about yesterday. The Red Sox will face 13 of their first 23 games against the Yankees and the Rays. So we'll know pretty much about the Red Sox pretty early on. In contrast, Danny, the Yankees, they'll have more room for error early in the season because only three of their final 23 are against teams that didn't lose 95 games last year. Now, the Blue Jays are one of those, so it's a little weird, but literally 20 out of their last 23 are against scrub teams, in essence. There you see it at the as we go through their schedule, as we keep going through it. 20 out of their last 23 against teams that lost 95 games last year. So once again, the Yankees get the best of it. Here's one. I'm curious your thoughts on this. The Marlins, Danny, and this was from a piece, this Marlins note. I want to get the authors of this piece correct. I want to give them credit. It's over at MLB.com, and it was Sarah Langs and Matt Kelly. So I want to give them their juice on this. The Marlins will play, Danny, 52 of their 60 games against teams that were at or above 500 last season. 52 out of 60. In contrast, by the way, the Orioles, the Blue Jays tied for second with 46, Braves fourth with 44, Mets fifth with 43. In contrast, the Dodgers and the A's, the Dodgers and the Athletics will only play 17 games against teams that were at or above 500 last season, tied for the fewest in the majors. So Marlins, as if they needed any worse news, 52 against 500 or above. The Dodgers and the Athletics, largely because they take themselves out of it in the West versus West thing, only 17, dude. So, like, these are all, like, incremental betting things to know, but they all accumulate and they matter for your handicapping, I think.
Yeah, some of these lesser teams are thinking, hey, 60 games, maybe we have a shot. We can go on a little hot streak. Well, if you're a team like the Marlins, maybe not so much. They kind of catch the shaft there a little bit, like you said. And how about the Reds, too? You pointed out how they have so much of an easier schedule, it appears, lined up with the Pirates, Royals, Tigers. And how about just in the Central, too? I mean, historically, at least the last few years, the Reds dominate the Cubs no matter what kind of squads they have, whatever the rosters. The Reds just always have the Cubs number. Now they actually have a solid roster, too. 31.5 is the win total for Cincinnati, Gil.
You are so excited about the Cubs and White Sox, aren't you? What are you, a Cubs or a White Sox guy?
I'm a diehard Cubs fan.
You are a Cubs fan. Dude, this is, you know what, though? This is the year. You know this better than anybody. They need to get it while the window is still here. Yep. The window goes away, I think, after this year.
Very much so.
May it happen, Danny. May the baseball season start on time 15 days from now. We can only hope. Should be fun with all these handicapping angles. We haven't talked golf today in earnest. We did with Chris Felique a little earlier. Let's do it with Brady Cannon. We'll catch him on the road. Golf coming up on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
BetMGM wants to start out with the lock. That's why they're giving new customers a chance to win $50 in free bets when they place a $1 wager on any Major League Soccer game. MLS starts tonight. All you have to do is sign up and make your first bet with bonus code VSIN50 to take advantage of this crazy offer. BetMGM has all of your favorite wagering options, as I've said before, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, daily promos, much, much more. It's very simple. Just download the BetMGM app today and use promo code VSIN50. That's VSIN50 on the BetMGM app to win $50 in free bets when you bet $1 on any MLS game. Just visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Got to be 21 or older and physically located in Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Nevada, or West Virginia. Please gamble responsibly. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado and Nevada, 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey and West Virginia, or 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Promotional offer not available in the great state of Nevada. It's Gil Alexander live in the Bay. And I don't know where this dude is right now, but I know he's on the road somewhere headed to some undisclosed location. I don't know. Maybe he wants to disclose it. It's the co-host of VSiN's Long Shots. It's Brady Cannon, everybody. How you doing, Brady? Where are you?
I'm great, Gil. I'm pulled over on the side of the road near Richfield, Utah, headed for cooler territory, trying to escape the triple digits we're expecting this week in Las Vegas.
Wow. All right. Well, don't let the paparazzi catch you, Brady. I know you're getting more popular every day with long shots. You and Wes Reynolds do a great job of it. I was talking to Wes earlier in the week. Both he and I fell into this category last week where we're like, well, Bryson DeChambeau 6-1. That's not a good number. We're not going to play him. We're going to play all these other guys. You did have DeChambeau. Was he part of your bets last week?
No. I was in the same camp as you guys. Wes had a nice analogy, like the 2-5 horse that just went wire to wire. DeChambeau, yep. You know, it's tough to bet on that type of guy, 6-1, 5-1, whatever it was, against a field of 157 players or so. But he did it. I unfortunately was on the other end having Matthew Wolf, which was tough to swallow, at 135-1, a heck of a number I was able to find at Circa Sports, and went into Sunday with a 3-shot lead, but hey, you win some, you lose some.
I forget. That's exactly what you had. You had Matthew Wolf. I forgot, the second place finisher, 3 back of Bryson DeChambeau. And I was also telling Wes, I was like, look, I had Hatton at 16-under. I had Webb Simpson, who everybody had, at 15-under. And I had Victor Hovland at 14-under. literally three dudes at 16, 15, and 14, and none of them were close, Brady. Like, none of them. That is pandemic golf right there in a nutshell. These scores are crazy. Well, DeChambeau's not playing this week at the Workday Charity Golf Open. This is the first of two consecutive weeks at Muirfield. So it's going to be a little bit more of a subdued field in terms of who's playing this week. How are you viewing it as a two-week thing, specifically this week? Who do you like? How are you betting it, sir?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it is a little bit of an interesting handicap. I think for the most part, you have to treat it like it is the Memorial, and you have to treat it as the Muirfield Village Golf Course and everything that goes along with that, the courses that correlate, one of which is Augusta National. When Jack Nicklaus built and designed Muirfield Village, he did it with Augusta National in mind. You'll see a lot of crossover success at those two courses. And then also, you'll see a lot of crossover success with Riviera Country Club in Los Angeles and Augusta National. And then finally, Firestone Country Club, not too far away in Akron, Ohio, where they used to play the WGC Bridgestone. You'll see a lot of crossover there as well. So I use those courses as corollaries. The one difference, or I guess probably the main difference, is you're going to see this week is the rough will be a little bit lower, not quite as penal this week. And also the greens are going to be running at a slower speed this week as opposed to next. Next week, I think the golf course is going to be a little bit more difficult, and I think the greens will run at a faster speed. So that plays into your handicap too. You know, guys that putt well on fast greens, guys that putt well at Augusta, probably going to be more true to look at them next week rather than this week, where you might look at some guys that are a little bit bulky with the putter more so this week. But that's kind of the direction I headed as far as the handicap. I looked at some guys that were in good form as of recent, as far as last week, with Adam Hadwin in a top five finish. I went with the chalk with Justin Thomas, who has been off for a couple weeks and has all the stats that check a lot of boxes this week. Justin Rose has tremendous course history here and at Firestone. Max, as far as some longer shot skill, Max Homa, Sebastian Munoz, Russell Henley, and probably one of my favorite picks, Gil. I got a feeling this week about Bubba Watson. Picked him up at 80-1. Great player at Riviera. Obviously a tremendous amount of success at Augusta. Also plays well at Firestone and has a couple of runner-ups here at the Memorial. I think Bubba could be ready for a really good week.
Yeah, you got him every which way. We're showing at VSiN.com and the VSiN app. Brady's futures on the left, his top, was that top 20s I saw there on the right, and then his head-to-heads. What about your head-to-heads here, Brady? Let's go through those if we could.
Yeah, Bubba has actually moved quite a bit. I put that play up there when I was recording long shots and didn't even get a chance to bet it until after the show. And by the time I got in, the number had moved. Bubba's a pretty solid favorite in that one. Head-to-head over Scottie Scheffler. And then Shane Lowry, who has won the WGC Bridgestone, got him at plus 110 over Billy Horschel, who does not have tremendous success at the Memorial. I think just one top 10 finish. And then the other one was Russell Henley, who checks a lot of the boxes as far as the stats this week. Nicklaus typically designs second-shot golf courses. So you want to look at how good are guys on the approach. I also think driving accuracy is a little bit more important this week than people might think. But driving accuracy, scrambling, and shots gained on approach, Russell Henley does all of that well and played him over Ryan Armour, who kind of came out of nowhere and had a great week last week. Kind of looking to go against him this week. I don't expect him to repeat that performance.
Talking to Brady Cannon, co-host of Long Shot here at the network, obviously VSiN's point spread weekly golf analyst as well. And oh, by the way, he's won a super contest. Want to mention that as well. Kind enough to pull over to the side of the road while he does a segment with me. Wouldn't want him to do it while driving. Brady, let me ask you this. On Sundays, so I've talked to you about this, what I call the Todd Wright theory, that when we would come back with golf during the pandemic, that some of these players that the casual golf fan wouldn't necessarily be aware of, with no galleries, they'd have less pressure, they'd bubble up. And I think that's a pretty good DFS thing. But on Sundays, for those of us who have, you know, a little bit on the to win market, which I've cautioned on this show many times is needle in a haystacky and not the way to sort of, you know, put too much of your golf pie in on a week to week basis. You should do the head to heads and the other derivative markets like the top 20s that Brady was just talking about. But on Sundays, as much as those players that the casual golf fan is not aware of as much as have bubbled up, we still see Daniel Berger, if I can throw him in, because he's got 32 straight rounds of par or better, Webb Simpson, Bryson DeChambeau, Dustin Johnson. We see a lot of pedigree rising to the top in the end. How many times do you, either to yourself or to your buddies, because this is all we do on Sundays, me and my buddies, when we're texting about golf, in the end, it just seems to be the guy who's been there before. And I'm wondering if that's a theme that needs to be focused on a little more, that some of these random players or the casual golf fan would consider more random. And obviously it's based on a number, but in the end, shouldn't we be focused on guys who have been there, done that?
Yeah. And I mean, really the class players have been rising to the top, and even Daniel Berger, like you allude to, he's absolutely a class player, even though he was at about 75 or 80 to 1 to win Colonial. And really, since then, it's been the chalk that have come through. And last week, we saw a lot of, you know, like you say, the random, more uncommon names come to the top. But you've got to have that resume. And I was really confident with Matthew Wolf because he's won at an NCAA level. He and Victor Hovland were on the championship team at Oklahoma State together. He also has won a PGA Tour tournament coming up in a couple weeks, the 3M Open in Minnesota. So he's been a little bit battle tested, but sure enough, the nerves got a little bit rattled on Sunday. And, you know, ultimately that's why he's 135 to one, and your eventual champion, Bryson DeChambeau, has proven that, you know, he's got thicker skin than Matthew Wolf at this point. But you're right. I think, you know, a couple things. I think you want to look at final round scoring, how guys perform on Sundays. Who ranks at the top of the PGA Tour on who's performing well on Sundays? That's something.
Yes.
And then also what kind of resume they have, if they can handle it down the stretch. Because, you know, even for Matthew Wolf, who does have a PGA Tour victory. And then you look at the majors. When you're coming down on Sunday, man, that's a pressure cooker. Can you imagine me and you in that position? We'd melt.
Thank you for including me with you, Brady. That was very charitable of you. Not half the golfer you are either, by the way. Very kind of you. I'm going Koepka, Hovland, and Cantlay. Cantlay with the best strokes gained at Muirfield, minimum 12 rounds. Those are my guys. Who's going to disappoint me the most of those three? Cantlay, Koepka, Hovland here in 30 seconds, Brady.
I think Cantley's a real good choice. Obviously, the defending champion next week. His stats are really through the roof, right there with Justin Thomas for me. Koepka's interesting. Has he come back from his injury entirely? I think he does have motivation that Wes Reynolds alluded to on long shots. Kind of, you know, has a little bit of a rivalry going with Bryson DeChambeau. I think that's a good thing for Koepka. And then Hovland, the only question mark is, playing 5 weeks in a row, is fatigue a factor yet? We will see.
We will see. Brady, strap up, seatbelt on. Enjoy your vacation, sir.
All right, my friend. Great to talk to you as always. Have a good weekend.
You too, Brady Cannon, on the road to somewhere undisclosed there in Colorado. Good luck with all your bets. We got soccer bets. We got golf bets. A whole bunch from all of us here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.